This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer, and hello, listeners. Once again, still summertime, and we have another great best of episode coming for you today. The episodes that are going to be on today's Best Of are some of the episodes where Galactic Space Geek Jeff learns more than he learns in all of our other episodes combined.
The Best of Amazing Engineering.
The Best of Amazing Engineering. I love engineering. This is so cool. It's great that we put these three together. So, on this Best of episode, you will hear from Dr. Arturo Dominguez, how can you hold the sun in a donut?
Fascinating.
Right? How do you design a sensor to learn about the deep ocean with Dr. Anna Michelle?
Wow, talk about engineering.
And how will astronauts get back to the moon with Jim Geoffrey?
Yeah, right up my alley right there.
Exactly. So everybody, take a listen to these episodes with amazing engineering in them.
How can we hold the sun in a donut?
How can we hold the sun in a donut? Oh, this is a really great question. I can't wait to know the answer. Who is our guest today?
Today, we're going to get the answer to that really cool question from Dr. Arturo Dominguez, who is the head of science education at, get this, the Princeton Plasma Physics Laboratory.
Oh, that's so cool. Welcome to the show, Dr. Arturo.
Thank you for having me, Jennifer and Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here.
We are so excited because, as Jeff says, we get to talk about the biggest source of energy that we care about here on the Earth, the sun. So let's start with the basics. Like, what is the sun made of? What is plasma?
That's a great question, Jennifer. Yes, you said it. It's plasma. Plasma is the fourth state of matter. When you have very cold matter, you have a solid state. Then you have liquid if you heat it up. Then you have a gas if you heat that up.
And three.
And then if you heat gas up enough, it becomes a new state of matter called plasma.
Oh.
Okay. And so you were just saying that's what the sun is. Now, I teach science. So are you saying that everyone that's ever called the sun a ball of fire is not actually accurate?
They are accurate-ish because fire is a plasma. The ones that aren't accurate is when they say a hot ball of gas. That's the one that I say, oh, no. That actually is a hot ball of plasma. But you did point out fire. Actually, fire is one type of plasma. So the stars are a type of plasma. Fire is a type of plasma. And there's several others.
Ah, I bet we're going to get to some more of them. All right. I like clearing up those things because when people talk science, facts really do matter.
Yeah.
So we should be saying things the correct way.
Okay. So I know that the sun is really, really, really hot. In fact, you probably know how hot it is. But fire is also a plasma. So how does fire get hot enough to become a plasma here on Earth?
Fire is, we hit on one of the controversial plasmas. Fire is the big cold. Some people actually argue if fire is a plasma or it isn't. So I would say, let's go to some of the ones that are definitely plasma. For example, a fluorescent light bulb or a neon sign. That's the type of plasma. When you look inside a fluorescent light bulb, it just looks like gas until you put a big voltage, a big source of energy across the sides, and it becomes a plasma inside. That's a plasma. Let's look at some other ones. For example, if you go out at night very far north, or very far south, and you look up at the sky, you see these majestic light shows, greens yes. and blues. That's a plasma. Those are called the auroras, aurora borealis, or northern lights. And actually, southern lights, do you all know what the southern auroras are called?
No, I do not.
Jeff is thinking.
I'm trying.
I don't know.
Aurora borealis and aurora. Nope, not coming to me.
Australis. This is another one. Yes. So you do, if you go very far south, you can also see the auroras. Yeah.
Okay. So talking about plasma, I know we've jumped straight into different types of plasma, et cetera.
Yes.
But you are a PhD in plasma physics.
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen? Were you just fascinated by neon signs, or like that sounds like to me, that sounds like one of those things where you not only better be the smartest kid in this class, you better be the smartest kid in a lot of classes.
So the cool thing about plasmas is that there's so many types of plasmas that are studied, you know, in astrophysics. In actually the ones that like low temperature plasmas, which are the ones that are like neon signs or the way you work materials. There's a lot of material processing that uses plasmas. So just to say there's different pathways into plasmas. The one that I took is actually closely related to the sun and the stars, and it's fusion energy. That's the one. That's what really got me excited in the field of plasma physics, and why I decided to pursue a doctorate was to study fusion and how I could help create a star on Earth.
That is a great lead into the next question. What is fusion? Can you explain it to us?
Yes. So fusion is what happens in all of the stars, including the sun. It's when very small nuclei of atoms, the very center of atoms, when they collide and combine together to form bigger nuclei, right? So when that happens, and you're talking about very small atoms like hydrogen or helium, when these small atoms combine, they release energy in that reaction. And that's the energy that powers all of the stars and the sun, right? So when we're talking about the energy of the stars, it's actually fusion energy. And the idea is to try to do that same reaction in an energy-producing device here on Earth. That's the holy grail of
yes.
the holy grail of the research that we're doing.
How do you design a sensor to learn about the deep ocean?
How can you design a sensor to learn about the deep ocean? This sounds very intriguing. And can I guess maybe a little bit of engineering is involved? Who is our guest today, Jeff?
Actually, it's going to be a lot of bit of engineering. Today, we get to talk to the very special Dr. Anna Michelle, who is Associate Scientist of the Department of Applied Ocean Physics and Engineering at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution.
Welcome to the show, Dr. Anna.
Thank you for having me.
This is so exciting to have another ocean person on the show because we've been having a lot of space. And the ocean is such a fascinating place. So I'm going to start with kind of an easy one. How did you decide you wanted to get into studying the ocean?
Well, I grew up in Florida. I grew up in a town called Sarasota, which is a beach town.
Yes.
And there's a marine lab there. So that kind of sparked my interest originally. But then I was very lucky as a high school student, I was able to participate in a cruise with Dr. Robert Ballard, who discovered the Titanic.
He
set up these live shows. Students could go to museums and see live exploration. But every year he also took some students out on a cruise. So in high school, I went on a research cruise to the Galapagos Islands, and I asked, how do you get to do this for a living?
And the exactly.
Study engineering. So I was sold.
That is absolutely cool.
Yes.
What I have to follow that up. What did you do on that cruise? Because you were just a high school student, right?
I was just a high school student. And unfortunately, the barge that was carrying all the equipment to the Galapagos, including the remotely operated vehicle at the time, which was called Jason Jr., sunk on the way to the islands.
Oh my God.
All of their equipment, all of the satellite infrastructure, everything was lost. So they had to quickly scramble to get all of this gear to do the project anyway. So we stayed on a small dive boat and we went to different islands and we got to see the animals and got to go snorkeling, and they brought small ROVs. And so we got to participate and just learn about these kind of careers and about the Galapagos Islands, and we got to drive the ROVs. And I was just amazed that this was even a career choice, that you could work with an underwater robot.
Well, and talk about solving problems right away. All of your equipment literally sunk into the ocean, and that had to get solved.
That is correct.
Wow. Okay, so tell us about operating an ROV. Tell us what it is, maybe for our listeners that don't know. And then tell us about how cool it is, I would imagine.
So an ROV is a remotely operated vehicle. So it's a robot that's tethered to a ship. So it's connected to the ship, which means that you can sit on the ship and drive it. Some of the pilots say it's a little bit like a video game. You have a joystick, you get to drive it around. So if you've got good video game experience, you can be an ROV pilot. So I don't myself drive the ROV. What my group does is we develop instruments that we put on the ROV so we can make measurements in the ocean. But what we get to do is sit in a room where all the video from the ROV is being transmitted back to the ship. Uh-huh. So we can see where the robot is. We can see what the robot is seeing. We can tell the pilots, hey, let's go over there. Let's do these kind of measurements. And so it's kind of like we're on the bottom of the ocean, but we're sitting on the dry ship.
That is,
and it's
so
all
cool.
Real time, correct?
It's all real time.
That's very cool, because you don't have to just program it to do what you want it to do. Like you were just saying, like, hey, let's go over there. If you see something down there in the cameras that wasn't maybe part of the plan, you can adjust the plan and make those tweaks.
That's correct. And also, because we have satellites, we can actually beam the video back. So people on shore can actually participate by sitting at their computer or going to certain places where they're beaming the video back. And they can actually see the live video from the robot back on shore also.
That is so cool. So the next question is, what are you looking for? I mean, is there anything specific, or you're just looking around to see what's there?
So that's a great question. So sometimes we are just looking. We're really curious. We want to explore. We want to find out what's there. Other times we have really targeted sites where we know there's something there and we want to go and understand what's happening there. So, you know, we always work with a big team of scientists. So we bring biologists, geologists, chemists. My lab itself, we work a lot with greenhouse gases. So we measure methane and carbon dioxide in these environments.
Right.
We're looking at places where fluids are coming out of the ocean, for example.
And then you want to test the fluids? I mean, what are you looking for with that?
We want to know what's in the fluids. So we want to try to understand what's happening in these environments. Sometimes we go to places as kind of a test bed. So we'll bring an instrument where we know there's a certain chemical and we want to see how well our instruments work. So that way we can give instruments to other scientists who want to learn more about different places.
That makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. With these instruments, are you going always to the same depth or about the same depth? Or do your depths vary greatly?
That's a great question. So it depends where we're working. So some sites are really deep. We'll work at, say, 4,000 meters. Other times we'll work at much shallower, say 100 meters. The Jason ROV is rated to 6,500 meters. So it can work really deep.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
It really depends.
Listeners, you got to do the math on that.
Very deep. So it takes hours for the vehicle to even get to the bottom and then do the science and then come back up, because it's a long way down. Wow. But we can work in these really deep environments. So everything we design has to work in these deep environments, which means we have to be careful because there's very high pressure. So everything has to be designed in special housings that can withstand the pressure of those depths.
How are astronauts going to get back to the moon?
3, 2, 1, fire.
How are astronauts going to get back to the moon? what a great episode for our 100th episode! Yay! Who is our guest today, Jeff?
That's right. I'm with you, Jennifer. 100 episodes of Solve It for Kids and Galactic Space Geek Jeff couldn't be more excited to have Jim Geoffrey, NASA's Orion Vehicle Integration Manager, with us to tell us all about the Orion Space Capsule and the Artemis missions.
This is going to be awesome. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Oh, it's so great to be here. I love what you guys are doing, and it's my pleasure to be here.
We are so excited because you are part of the Artemis program, right?
That's right. Yeah, I work in the Artemis program with the Orion spacecraft.
Can you tell us what is the Orion spacecraft going to do?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Orion spacecraft is the piece of the whole mission that helps bring astronauts back to the moon. So in 1972, we were last on the moon, December of 1972. And now I'm very fortunate to be part of the program that takes Americans and really a whole international crew back to the moon. The Orion spacecraft itself is a key part of that architecture. So the astronauts are going to go to Florida at the Kennedy Space Center.
Right.
They'll climb into the Orion spacecraft that's stacked on top of the Space Launch System, and that will blast them off and send them out to the moon, where they'll get to meet up with a lander vehicle that takes them down. And once they do their science and exploration on the moon, they get back to Orion, which is waiting in orbit around the moon. They transfer back over, and they come back to Earth at a really high velocity, landing off the west coast of the U.S.
Wow. This is so exciting.
This really is very exciting for all of us that grew up, for the grown-ups that are listening, for all of us that grew up and we wanted to see that space program continue, but then it didn't, to know that this program is so close to taking us back and then keeping us there. There are so many things that are coming that are very exciting. So I want to start right away with the actual vehicle itself, the Orion spacecraft. Is it the same size as Apollo? Is it bigger? I have seen pictures. I know it's very much the same shape.
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. You know, it looks very similar, but really it's the similarity is only on the surface.
Okay.
It's about 70% roomier inside.
Oh, and, that's nice.
Oh, yeah. I bet you those Apollo astronauts would have loved the extra space to do their job. So yeah, we're also going to carry more people back to the moon. Oh. Orion is designed to take 4 people.
Okay.
We'll bring it's an international crew. And the reason why it's bigger is, one, the job they have to do is more complex with the exploration they're doing. And they're also going to be in there for a lot longer. Orion is designed for 21 days of being away from Earth. So imagine being locked in your same vehicle for 3 weeks' time.
like my minivan for 3 weeks. I don't know if I could do that.
Exactly.
With your three best friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly why you want it to be a little bit more roomy and a little bit more comfortable.
So they will be in this from the time they blast off until, you know, they go, and then this is the actual capsule that will go down to the moon. Is that right?
So the capsule itself is going to meet up with a lander.
Okay.
In fact, just recently, NASA picked SpaceX to partner with us on the Artemis program and build the landing vehicle that will take people from orbit around the moon down and back again. And it's Orion's job to meet up with that out in orbit around the moon and transfer the astronauts back over.
Okay.
Okay. So before we get too far into the really, really cool stuff about the bigger picture, the way you were just describing that and how the Orion capsule is going to meet up with the lander, et cetera, that led me right back to how I introduced you and your actual job. Can you describe a little bit more? What does it mean to be the Orion Vehicle Integration Manager?
Yeah, you described it very well. It's a kind of a very innocuous sounding title, but basically my job is to make sure that all the pieces of the vehicle work together. And not only okay. they can work together, but they can perform the mission that we've been given by the American people. So all the different systems that it takes to keep people alive and take them to the moon, your propulsion system to move around the right. solar system,
right.
all the life support equipment that's needed to keep people alive and healthy, all those things need to interact and work together as one cohesive system. And that's what integration is all about. It's making sure all the different pieces work together and can accomplish the goal you're trying to perform. And that's basically my job, is make sure everything works together.
What did I tell you beforehand, Jen? The engineering episodes are absolutely fascinating to me because I didn't do any engineering in my schooling. So what engineers can do when they put their heads together and start collaborating, communicating, and using their critical thinking is mind-blowing to me.
Yes. So I did take engineering in college, but what I love is seeing it in action, right?
Yes.
I love it seeing them actually have to do this. It's so just incredible. All right, so if you want to learn more, please go listen to the rest of these episodes on our website, solveitforkids.com. And you can always leave us a message by tagging us on our social media. We are at KidSolve at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And let us know if there is a topic that we haven't covered yet that you want to hear about.
There have to be topics, because every time we have a guest that tells us something new, we find out there are scientists, engineers, and experts doing amazing things all over this planet with science in mind.
Absolutely.
Until next time, you'll hear Jen and Jeff on
Solve It for Kids.